I bet you remember where you were on January 6th, 2021. I do. Like you, I was glued to the television as the pro-Trump Stop the Steal rally culminated in a violent mob storming the U.S. Capitol. Now, as we approach the five-month anniversary of the insurrection, yes, can you believe it's been 5 months? The entire Republican Party has made one thing totally clear. They want to move on and forget all about it. It seems they're holding Trump and his big lie closer than ever. The party just kicked out a top leader in the House, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, for calling Trump out on his lies and authoritarianism.
He must not ever again be anywhere close to the Oval Office.
The GOP might be desperate to move on. But the nation isn't. Far from it. There are still hundreds of court cases going through and people facing serious charges in an unprecedented investigation at the Department of Justice, the biggest counterintelligence operation since 9/11. And just last week, the House passed a bill to set up a January 6th commission. It will face obstacles in the Senate. And we're learning more all the time. Over the next two episodes, a snapshot of where we are right now, how we got here, and what's next in the hunt for the insurrectionists. I'm Fernanda Chavarri, sitting in for our host extraordinaire, Jamila King. Today, we're going to hear the story of someone who you might not think fits the picture of an insurrectionist and how she was radicalized so quickly. This week, the radicalized. Next week, the radicalizers. Stick around. The story you're about to hear is the story of one intensely radicalized woman who challenges many assumptions about who became an insurrectionist on January 6th and about what it says about extremism in the United States today.
So thank you. Thank you for such a warm welcome. I am pleased and joyful to be here. So Dr.
Simone Gold is a Stanford-educated lawyer and board-certified emergency room physician.
As you've heard, I'm a board-certified emergency physician. I'm also an attorney.
Who ended up on an FBI Most Wanted poster.
And what happened was I was seeing patients on the front line in the emergency department, which is what I do, when two very bizarre things happened to me, approximately this time last year.
For this, I'm joined by my colleague, Stephanie Mensimer, senior reporter for Mother Jones. She just published this gripping profile at motherjones.com. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Fernanda.
Who is this woman and how did you find out about her?
So Simone Gold is somebody who kind of arrived onto the right-wing media circuit last summer when the pandemic really took off. She was doing anti-lockdown protests out in Beverly Hills where she lives.
The lockdown is killing more people on Earth than the virus is.
Who am I here with?
Hi, I'm Dr. Simone Gold. I'm a board-certified emergency physician. That's my day job. And I'm also a Stanford-educated attorney. Please don't hold that against me.
What's your message to Gavin Newsom and Eric Garcetti?
That there's no scientific justification for locking people down.
Open California?
Open California.
Very cool.
She got on talk radio with some very influential conservative people like Dennis Prager.
Well, if it's not safe, have they been baffled by your hospital's turnaround?
Right. So, no, which I think the amnesia very, very upsetting.
The amnesia. What a great term.
It's very upsetting. There's so many things about this situation that are so disturbing. I think it bothers me more because of my law background as well, because I see the threat is legal and the threat is not really medical at this point. That's not to minimize anyone's suffering, of course, but we need to look at the facts. We need to make decisions for society based on the facts.
She was doing YouTube videos, kind of hitting the younger audiences, and she just happened to time all of her activism just right, because at the time, the Trump administration and the Trump campaign actually was trying to find doctors who would come out and basically defend Trump's handling of the pandemic. And so there was a group of pretty powerful conservatives who are in the Trump orbit, like Jenny Beth Martin at the Tea Party Patriots and the Council on National Policy, which is a very kind of secretive but powerful group of evangelical organizers and movers and shakers. And they all connected with Simone, and she had like a letter she wrote to Trump.
Earlier this week, 600 doctors wrote a letter to President Trump, reading in part, quote, "It is impossible to overstate the short, medium, and long-term harm to people's health with a continued shutdown. Losing a job is one of life's most stressful events, and the effect on a person's health is not lessened because it also has happened to 30 million other people. Keeping schools and universities closed is incalculably detrimental for children, teenagers, and young adults for decades to come."
Calling the lockdowns like a mass casualty event. And so she got like 400 doctors to sign a letter and then asked Jenny Beth Martin to take it to Trump. And that kind of set in motion like her rise. And she just became a social media and a conservative media star within weeks of all that happening last spring. But what really put her into the limelight was in July, when she and Jenny Beth Martin organized a white coat summit of the so-called America's frontline doctors.
"Now, to those Americans who are genuinely afraid, we are physicians. We are here to help you with these facts, to reduce your fear."
They went to the Supreme Court and stood on the steps and had a big press conference with about, I think there were about 12 doctors on their white coats.
"Hello, America. I'm Dr. James Todaro. I received my medical degree from Columbia University in New York, followed by 4 years of residency training."
And you might remember this because one of the doctors became famous when it came out that she believed that some gynecological problems could be caused by having sex with demons.
"We call them all kinds of names. Endometriosis, we call them molar pregnancies, we call them fibroids, we call them cysts, but most of them are evil deposits from the spirit husband."
So she became known as the demon sperm doctor. And the doctors all got up and talked about how they didn't think masks worked.
"So-called experts keep telling you that a bandana can stop a virus that is 1,000 times smaller than a hair. How stupid do you think we are?"
They promoted hydroxychloroquine as a COVID treatment, you know, Trump's favorite sort of bogus COVID treatment that didn't really work.
"This is a treatment regimen that's very simple, and it should be in the hands of the American people."
Breitbart actually broadcast the video, and President Trump and his son Donald Jr. both tweeted the video out, and it went viral in like just a couple of hours. Like within a couple hours, they had 20 million hits on this video that was all misinformation about the pandemic. And Simone was right in the middle of it all. And Facebook and Twitter and YouTube pulled it down because of all the things in it that were just wrong.
"When we came to Washington to share the good news with the American people that there is treatment, there are options, as you know, we were immediately shut down by social media. We've gotten 18 or 20 million views in 6 hours, which just shows that the American public really wants to hear this stuff. And then we were deplatformed across all social media. However, the fight to get hydroxychloroquine into the hands of the people continues."
So this isn't somebody who slowly built up her following or who sort of dipped her toe in the waters of extremism and then slowly worked her way in. This is a sort of fast track to extremism and celebrity. She barely got involved with all of this a year ago, and conservative media and people on the internet sort of made her a star, right?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Charlie Kirk Show. I am thrilled to be joined by Dr. Simone Gold.
I mentioned we have a guest joining us, Dr. Simone Gold. Now here to tell us more is Dr. Simone Gold.
And joining me now is the emergency medicine specialist, Dr. Simone Gold.
She is the founder of America's Frontline Doctor. She's just a force to be reckoned with.
She's a board certified emergency physician working on the front lines during the pandemic.
Thank you, doctor, for being here. Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Ed.
Like, it was probably the quickest rise and then later fall of anybody I've ever seen on Fox News, because she, you know, was there on January 6th and was in part of the riot at the U.S. Capitol.
Let's talk about that. What was her role on January 6th, and what makes her stand out amongst all the people who were there that day.
Well, it's funny. She actually marched into the Capitol Rotunda with all the rioters and yelled, "I am a Stanford educated lawyer." So, like, there are all those people like the QAnon shaman and, you know, military types and all sorts of MAGA people. And then there was her, and she's this like Beverly Hills emergency room doctor. And so on some levels, she just didn't quite fit the profile, I think, of what people imagine as a rioter. But she was actually there on January 5th.
But we're also fighting the lockdowns and medical tyranny.
Where they had kind of a warm-up rally the night before.
With that, I want to introduce Dr. Simone Gold.
And she had given a speech there.
So, as you all know, I'm a board-certified emergency physician, also a Stanford University-educated attorney, and a mom, and I became the founder of something called America's Frontline Doctors because we were so tired of the people being told lies and disinformation, and we came forward.
And then she was supposed to give a talk somewhere near the White House on the 6th, but that event got canceled as everybody started marching to the Capitol, so she just joined in. She was with a guy, the international underwear model who serves as her communications director. And they marched into the Capitol right up front with all sorts of people. Like, they were in a spot where one of the police officers was pulled to the ground, and it was right in front of her, actually. There's footage of it. And then she went in and gave her speech in the rotunda and then kept going. And there's pictures of her right up deep inside the Capitol, I think near the Senate chamber. So she was following some of the most militant people, you know, the guys with the flex bands or the little plastic handcuffs. I don't think she assaulted anybody, or that she's not been accused of anything like that, but she was definitely in there. And the FBI had her on a wanted poster for a few days, but people, because of her video over the summer, made her so famous because she'd been on Fox News. It didn't take very long for people to figure out who she was.
Federal officials this week arrested the head of a fringe medical group that has promoted false claims about vaccines and the antimalarial drug hydroxychloroquine in connection with the deadly January 6th riots at the U.S. Capitol.
So January 6th is done. And Dr. Simone Gold, like most of the people who stormed the Capitol, just get on a plane and go back home. In her case, it's a really nice home in Beverly Hills. And then what happens? The FBI puts her in a most wanted poster. Do they show up at her door? What happens?
I think she was home for about 2 weeks, and all these pictures of her had been circulating. And, you know, the FBI was looking for more information. And by her telling, 20 or two dozen FBI agents showed up at her house early in the morning and kicked her door down and arrested her.
And then, what if a dozen FBI agents broke down your door, swarmed you with automatic rifles, handcuffed you, and without reading you your rights, threw you in a jail cell for 4 days without even a phone call?
I'm not sure it was quite that dramatic, but the FBI did come to her house and arrest her. And she, you know, was taken to jail and processed. And she was let out on bail. She likes to say like it was 4 days later and that she spent all this time in jail and couldn't call a lawyer, when that's totally not true. She was released and got to go home.
So it wasn't days, like she said? How quickly?
Yeah, I think it was just like, it wasn't even a whole day. I don't think she even spent the night there. I think she was released within a few hours of her arrest.
Did having the FBI arrest her make her more famous? Did the insurrection sort of light a fire under her to be more active and more vocal? Because one might think that after you have been charged with crimes by the FBI, that you might want to chill out a little bit.
Well, any good lawyer would, for, you know, number one, tell you, don't talk about what you did, because that's your first mistake. Because the lawyers, if she goes to trial, the first thing they'll do is bring up all of her public statements.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to Diamond and Silk, the podcast where your host, Diamond and Silk, as Silk Old Silk.
Diamond Old Diamond.
Okay, so we do have a lot to talk about. Yes. And you know, I love conversations with people. So we had to bring in the expert.
Uh-huh.
The expert.
The expert.
We bring in a doctor.
The doctor.
So I want y'all to join the conversation, because we're about to go over here and talk to Dr. Simone Gold. Come on.
Come on.
A
All right.
Wow.
Are you okay? We heard about what happened. We heard about the stuff that happened. We know what happened up there at the Capitol, how you got mixed up in something. Are you okay? What do you need? What's going on with that? Is everything good with that?
I have to believe in our amazing founding fathers who set up a judicial system that will absolutely exonerate me. Everybody knows I speak publicly. That's what I do. That's what I did. They pulled me in because I guess I'm more well-known than I appreciated. And I have no doubt that the jury system is going to do, first of all, it should be dropped. The charges should be dropped. But if the government ends up not doing that, we'll go to trial. And I believe in the power of 12 Americans.
All right.
So are you able to talk anything about the case?
You know, I'm pretty public. Basically, I was invited to speak. The speakers were canceled at the last minute without any explanation. You then had 50, 80,000 people milling about with no focus. And I'm at the kind of the head of the group. And many thousands of people walked inside. The section I was in was completely peaceful, never saw anything violent. It was peaceful. People were singing Back the Blue. I literally stood there, gave my speech, and then I left. And we didn't know this was a story or a thing until later we watched the news and saw what people said. So what people said and what actually was of course, very, very different. There were many thousands of people where I was, but I'm somebody that they really want to silence because I talk out. Really, I talk on civil rights and human rights.
She's facing at least one potential felony charge, which could carry a number of years in prison. It's not quite clear yet. She wants to ride this as long as she can and use it for publicity. And I think she thinks she could speak to the jury and that they would sympathize with her.
And you tried to reach out to her many times and she just wouldn't talk to you, right?
Yeah, I made a bunch of efforts to talk to her and she never responded. Although I had a couple of exchanges with the international underwear model, but he never answered any of my questions. But he's her official spokesperson for the America's Frontline Doctors.
And I know you spoke with researchers who went through the hundreds of names of people who are charged with crimes after storming the Capitol. What did the researchers find about who these people are? And where does Dr. Simone Gold fit in all of this?
You know, one of the things I thought was really interesting in this research, there are people at the center in Chicago that study extremism, not just in the United States, but abroad too. And they put together a database of all the professions and the backgrounds and the age of and the demographics of all the people that they've been able to. I think there's more than 400 Capitol defendants. And they compared those people to people who've been arrested for acts of political violence in the past, like in Charlottesville and a couple of years ago when there was the Unite the Right rally and things like that. And the one thing that really stuck out for them was that the people who were arrested at the Capitol were by and large middle-aged and middle class. I think there's this perception that it was like an angry mob and people who are angry tend to be like unemployed or have reasons to hate the government. But most of the people were over 40 and there were, I think it was about 30% of them are white collar professionals and all of them were employed. There are very few unemployed people who were arrested at the Capitol. So that was really different from what we've seen before. And Simone is right in there. I mean, she's still kind of an exception because she's just so well educated. And I think she's the only doctor who got arrested at the Capitol. She's one of only two lawyers that they found. Far-right extremism usually is a guy thing. It's historically been something that's dominated mostly by men. But in this case, there are about 15% of the Capitol breach defendants are female. And so she's part of that little minority too. But I think the researchers are kind of disturbed because to see this kind of violence coming from like a mass mob of middle-class, middle-aged people engaging in political violence is something new and different and potentially a problem going forward.
Stick around. We'll be right back.
Mother Jones stories you're hearing right now are brought to you by our listeners and loyal readers who fuel our work. Audience support makes up 2/3 of the Mother Jones budget and helps our team dig deep on stories that matter. Make a donation at motherjones.com/give to keep our nonprofit newsroom humming. Again, that's motherjones.com/give.
Welcome back to the Mother Jones Podcast. We've been listening to the story of Simone Gold, a stereotype-busting insurrectionist, doctor, lawyer, woman. My colleague, Mother Jones senior reporter Stephanie Mensimer, recently wrote a profile of her and is bringing us the story behind how someone like Gold ended up at the January 6th attack on the Capitol. So let's get back to our conversation. Who was Dr. Gold before she was radicalized?
Simone is from a kind of wealthy neighborhood in New York. Her father was a Romanian Jewish immigrant and had also been a doctor. All of his kids, Simone and all her siblings, grew up to be doctors. She graduated from college. I think she went to the City College of New York, and she graduated at the age of 19 and then went on to medical school and graduated in 1989 when she said she was the youngest person in her class at the Chicago Medical School. And from there, she went on to Stanford Law School, you know, as if medical school weren't enough of an accomplishment. And so she, you know, took the bar, and then she went on and became board certified in emergency medicine, and then went and set up a practice in Beverly Hills, California. And she spent some time actually working on Capitol Hill. She worked for the Israeli ambassador to the United States for a little while. She did all sorts of, you know, resume checking sorts of things that do not really scream, you know, budding revolutionary. And she had two kids, and they went to a Jewish day school, a private day school in Beverly Hills. And she helped on the PTA, and her family gave money to the school, and they did sort of ordinary, you know, upper middle class kinds of things.
So how does the process of radicalization happen so quickly?
Well, I think that this year has just been so extraordinary. The pandemic just created all sorts of pressures on people. And I think that the lockdowns were hard on people, not just sort of psychically having to stay home, but, you know, financially, a lot of people suffered. So even though these people at the Capitol who were, they were mostly middle class, you know, even Simone Gold, she actually, she got $150,000 worth of bailout loans because her medical practice tanked when all the hospitals stopped doing elective surgery and nobody wanted to go to the ER because they were afraid of getting COVID. So I sort of wondered if part of what set her off was the fact that her own finances took a hit early on in the pandemic. And I think that also social media and conservative media is kind of what one of the experts I talked to said. There are like three pillars of radicalization. And one of them is that you need a network to support your narrative. And so she had the narrative. And then once she got picked up and sort of put into this conservative media world and conservative ecosystem, like the talk circuit and everything, she had a network that supported her and lavished her with praise and probably money. And it just encouraged her to do even kind of crazier things.
If you don't want to take an experimental biological agent deceptively named a vaccine, you must not allow yourself to be coerced.
It all happened really fast. And then, you know, it all culminated on January 6th. And she did an interview, actually, with the California TV station. And the reporter asked her, this was after the 6th, and she said, well, why did you do it? You know, what possibly motivated you?
When I was in the rotunda and I got the genius idea to give my speech, someone, I don't know, I just wanted to, whatever. Someone had a bullhorn, so I asked to use it.
And like she was at that point anyway, kind of marveling that she had done this herself. Like something happened where she was just caught up in the moment. And of course, now she's early days after the riot. She was like, well, I don't know. I just wanted to. That was her answer.
Oh, you know, we can all relate when you get caught up in the moment and right. you just break into the Capitol. The adrenaline is pumping and you just join the insurrection. So relatable, right?
Right.
And Stephanie, since the insurrection, the Department of Justice has taken the attacks on the Capitol quite seriously. They have charged, as we've said, hundreds of people with crimes. What can you tell us about the investigation and what's happening with the people who have been charged?
Well, I think it's actually moving kind of slowly because there are just so many of them. There's more than 400 people that are being processed. And I think the vast majority of them have been charged with misdemeanors. And I think those cases, they'll eventually probably dispose of pretty quickly because people will just plead guilty. But so far, there hasn't been a trial. And there, I think only two people have pleaded guilty. One of those people, though, is one of the founders of the Oath Keepers, or an original member of the Oath Keepers. And I think part of his plea agreement requires him to, like, rat out all of his fellow, you know, militia members who are at the Capitol. So that was a big deal to have one of those guys take a plea. And I think that the Justice Department would prefer to focus on the people who are actually really violent and who assaulted police officers and broke stuff and pepper sprayed people and that sort of thing. So they still haven't even caught everybody who are the key players in this. So I think it's going to be a long slog.
What does her story tell us about what's going on right now? And why does her story matter?
I think with her, it just is such a good example of how education doesn't necessarily, is no defense against radicalization. Education isn't going to be enough to counter, like, misinformation and conspiracy theories and all the things that come into play there. It's kind of frightening the way that conservative media filled that void for her. And I think that we really underestimate the effect of conservative media on reinforcing radicalism and extremism and conspiracy theories, because it provides people with this community and this reinforcement in a way that, you know, I think you see it on the left a little bit, but it's just not the same as what happens with Fox News and Newsmax and all of those places. And I think that if there is, that the future is not going to look too much better unless we address some of that head on.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
Ali Breland is our misinformation reporter and expert on all things at the intersection of tech and politics. Ali, I wanted to bring you in because I know you spoke with an expert on white power movements recently who talked about a couple of things that directly tied to the radicalized doctor we just heard about.
Yeah, after hearing Stephanie's reporting, there were two things that stuck out with me from my conversation with Kathleen Ballou. She's a research fellow at Stanford University and an assistant professor of history at the University of Chicago. The first one is that socioeconomic status is not the best indicator of whether or not someone is an extremist. Socioeconomically, they can run the gamut of being anything from the sort of stereotypical poor, backwoods, trailer trash archetype that people are kind of quick to assume about what white nationalists are. But also, as Ballou's colleague at the University of Chicago, Robert Pape, found, many people who participated in January 6th were affluent managerial class types or business owners who made good money and didn't have quote-unquote economic anxiety. Ballou realized historically that it's been something else.
One of the interesting things about the Klan throughout its lifespan is that it has these big rises and falls in membership levels. And these crests in membership align more consistently with the aftermath of warfare than they do with any other historical factor. It's a better predictor for Klan activity than poverty or populism or immigration or civil rights advancement. The best predictor is the aftermath of warfare. It turns out, though, that that story isn't just about veterans who come home and bring skills with them, although some do that and they have a huge impact on the violent capacity of these groups. It turns out that that impact is across all of American society. So if you look at sociological markers, all of us are more violent in the aftermath of warfare. It goes across age, it goes across gender, it goes across who did and didn't serve.
And the second one is what Ballou told me about how white power was organized into these sort of concentric circles. She used the example of the 1980s white power movement, which started with about 25 people in this middle circle who are deeply involved in the movement.
They educate their kids in the movement and they marry other activists. They pick each other up from the airport. Their lives are inside the movement. And then outside of that, there's a group of 150,000 people and they're less involved, but they do things. They like give money. They show up for rallies. They'll purchase and circulate newspapers. And then outside of that is another 450,000 people. And now we're talking about people who don't show up for things or do anything public or even contribute money, but who regularly have contact with movement materials. So people who always get the newspaper from their friend who purchased it and then read it on their own, right? So that mode of organizing both pushes ideas from that mainstream, from that kind of hardcore center group out into the mainstream of our politics. And it also locates people that can be radicalized and pulls them in across those different levels of membership activity.
And this type of setup is something that we're seeing today?
Yeah, but what's also concerning for Ballou is the speed which these ideas are moving in the mainstream, particularly with the political mainstream. Just kind of how Stephanie described it with Dr. Simone Gold.
January 6th wasn't meant to be a mass casualty attack. It was meant to be a recruitment event. It was meant to be a show of force and a moment of what these guys would call political awakening that they could use to reach into the Trump base and into the QAnon groups and grab people that they could radicalize toward that hardcore center of activity.
Thanks, Ellie. We'll hear much more from you in next week's episode. That's it for today's show. Next week, we continue by looking at a key radicalizer behind the insurrection who continues to rise in popularity with young Gen Z extremists. We'll hear from a former Oath Keeper about why he joined and then left the movement and bring you historical context of how Americans turn to conspiracy theories as a collective response to anxiety.
Hi, my name is Matt Cohen, and this is my last week as a reporting fellow in the DC office.
I'm Laura Thompson, and it's my last week as an editorial fellow in the San Francisco office.
The last few months, I've worked on stories about the January 6th insurrection, as well as the rise of militias in Virginia.
For the last 2 years, I've worked on stories about gender, housing, policing, and, of course, Lenny Kravitz.
Here are the credits for today's show.
Theme music for the Mother Jones podcast was composed by Micah Barrick at Hear Film.
This episode was co-produced by Fernanda Echavarri and Molly Schwartz. It was reported by Stephanie Mensmer, Ali Breland, and Fernanda Echavarri.
And mixed and mastered by James West, with extra production by Mark Helenowski. And credit where credit is due. Mother Jones is supported by you, our listeners and readers. So thanks.
This podcast is brought to you by Mother Jones listeners like you who donate to keep our newsroom buzzing. Help us stay on the beat. Go to motherjones.com/give.
From PRX.